Welcome to Apollo Life Past and Present, the show where you can learn about the history of Apollo through the eyes of the people that have been here. Apollo Life Past and Present is brought to you by Res Radio 91.3. I am Eric, your host. On today's show, we are going to share an interview with author Dr. Jane Hill. I had the pleasure of meeting with her on a cool day in Tucson, Arizona. I believe it was only like 97 degrees. She says they don't think it's hot until it hits the hundreds. Well, Dr. Hill worked with Rosendo Lasquez in the 60s and created the book Mullah with Tom. She and Rosendo Lasquez co-authored it. It is a compilation of stories that are written in both English and Potnahill. Potnahill is the word for the language of the Copena people. And here is a clip from that interview.
So anyway, it was basically William Bright who said, you know, this is work that needs to be done. And he outlined, you know, a bunch of options. And he said, you know, there's this really nice lady at Paul. I really liked her. And that was Rosendo Lasquez. And then, of course, the other part of that I think I told you before, he said, and don't go see Nicholas Chuparosa because he met me, you know, with a rifle and ran me off.
Oh, that was William Bright who went.
Yeah, that was William Bright. And so he said, you know, he's not going to talk to you.
As you can see, this is a very good story of the beginning of the book, Mullah with Tom. So looking forward to that interview and or to that conversation in a little bit. Now, how about some bird songs? These are from Raul Grisman from Baron Long. Now we got the interview with Dr. Jane Hill. I would introduce you to her, but she says most of it in the conversation we had. So here she is, Dr. Jane Hill.
So, Jane Hill, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
And
glad to welcome you to Tucson before the weather gets really hot.
I guess it was pretty hot yesterday, but I got down here.
Oh, 90s. We don't count the 90s.
Yeah, a little bit on the high side of 90, but yeah. Just 90s.
Nah, it's got to get over. I mean, the ice doesn't break here until it hits 100.
The ice on the Santa Cruz, right?
Yes, on the Santa Cruz, right. No. So anyway, well, you wanted to reminisce, I guess.
Yeah. We spoke once before about how you started down to Paula. Tell me that part about how you were at school. And
yeah, I was in graduate school at UCLA, and the guy who was directing my work, William Bright, who died about 4 or 5 years ago now. No, it would have been more like 7 or 8. You get to my age, you know, and everything was yesterday. He had, you know, joined the UCLA faculty as a very, very young faculty member, and he was very interested in Native American languages, and he went all over Southern California and met all kinds of people, you know, to find people that his students could work with and, you know, work that needed to be done and stuff like that. I mean, to give you an idea of what he did, he ran a methods course for us, and Catherine Sobel was the lady who came in to be, you know, our instructor.
Oh, really? Awesome.
It was pretty awesome. And my husband's notes from that are still over there. She was much younger then. She was, you know, in her early 40s, I think. Very robust lady. You know, this was back about 1961, I think, was when it was. So anyway, it was basically William Bright who said, you know, this is work that needs to be done. And he outlined, you know, a bunch of options, and he said, you know, there's this really nice lady at Paula. I really liked her, and that was Rosinda Nolasquez. And then, of course, the other part of that I think I told you before, he said, and don't go see Nicholas Chuparosa because he met me, you know, with a rifle and ran me off.
Oh, that was William Bright who went.
Yeah, that was William Bright. And so he said, you know, he's not going to talk to you. And he also said, you know, this, and I don't know, you know, what the politics are now, but he said that Rosinda Nolasquez and Julia Kalak are the two really good speakers at Paula. And he said, they don't get along with each other, and you got to pick one. And he said, I personally liked Rosinda better. He always called her Miss Nolasquez, you know, but that's, so I went down and I met her, and she said, sure. She said, I'd like to, you know, to do some teaching and get some recording done. And so I got a teeny little grant from the Survey of California Indian Languages. And by the way, all of that stuff, you know, the field notebooks and things that I just gave you the flash drive for, are in Berkeley, and they have a digitization program. And what I just gave you, a lot of the field notes are just terrible looking because, you know, I had a graduate student copying them on our photocopy machine in the department, and some of the PDFs came out really well and really clearly, and some of them are not so clear. I think she recopied all the ones that had been. I was anxious not to give her too much work, you know. But anyway, it's all going to be in really good digitalization, you know, professionally digitized.
Yeah.
Wow. And it may already be there. I haven't checked the Berkeley site recently. So anyway, I went down to meet Rosinda, and I worked with her for, I think it was 2 summers. I'm trying to remember if I went down to see her a third summer. I think I did go down to see her, but just, you know, for a couple of days on a weekend or something like that.
Really?
And I lived with the Deskoviches. And I think Melody, born Deskovich, still lives at Paula. At least I met her at some kind of doings there about 10 years ago.
Really?
This was a white family. And I think Mrs. Deskovich, she was a cook in the cafeteria or something like that. I don't remember, you know, it's been so long ago now. I worked with Rosinda for 2 summers. And basically, I was down there, you know, we were working 5 days a week and basically spending all day, you know, 3 hours in the morning and 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon, and trying to get as much down as we could. And I've got to say, I mean, I was just a terrible field worker. They really didn't train us very well then. And I know a lot more about linguistics and stuff now than I did then, you know, and I look back at those field notes and I say, oh my God, why didn't I ask that? You know, that's what Eric is going to be doing. You know, he's going to be going through there and saying, why didn't she ask that? Most obvious thing in the world, you know, and it isn't here anywhere, you know. And when I mostly did Rosinda really liked to tell stories, and she was a great storyteller. You know, you have all that stuff on tape. And so mostly what I did is I just collected stories, and then we would, it was probably kind of boring for her, but go through them, you know, word by word, sentence by sentence, trying to get down exactly what she had said and stuff like that. And one of the files, the title is, I think it's Rosinda in Alaska's Creation or something like that. Anyway, it's a revised version of those stories, because when I did the book, I had little kids, you know, and the working conditions truly sucked, I can tell you. And in 2000, you know, with all my kids growing up and nobody bothering me, I got a fellowship to work in a research institute in Australia. It was just bliss, you know. I mean, nobody bothered me. I was out in the middle of nowhere. Phone never rang, stuff like that. And so I was able to go through all those tapes again and make some corrections. And I discovered places where I'd left out whole sentences, you know, when I was typing them up. There are not too many of those, but there are some. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And I haven't finished that job yet, but you have on the flash drive, you have, you know, what I've done so far, and I will get the rest of it to you.
Yeah, we actually noticed some that were the book is actually different from the recording.
And, oh, yeah. Some of it she changed
it
herself.
That. Yeah.
I was able to use that sometimes, that is, I made the difference between, you know, telling and teaching. So when she was telling, you know, she just zooming along, and which was quite a skill, because of course I could understand some of what she was saying, but not all of it by any means. And but she, you know, turned that tape recorder into an audience, you know, and did these performances. And then when we would go over them, sometimes she would say, you know, no, you know, I said it wrong, it ought to be this way, and change the grammar a little bit, you know. So the stuff that you have in there, a couple of times, the new stuff you have, I made kind of a judgment call. I said, you know, I think she fixed this because she thought it was wrong, you know. And so I kept her correction. But the places where I accidentally left out a sentence as I typed the thing up, you know, that's fixed. And There are little, we call them discourse particles in the tellings, things like, you know, sort of special emphases and contrast things and stuff like that. And a lot of times when she would retell, since she was doing it sentence by sentence instead of stringing all the sentences together, she'd leave those little bits out, you know, because you wouldn't need them. And so when I was going over it again, and some of them are really hard to hear, you know, I would, by the time I was redoing these texts, I knew what some of those were, you know, and so when I heard them, I put them back in, because they're part of the telling. So there's that kind of change. But anyway, so I was working there, and man, you think it gets pretty hot in Paul in the summer too, I'll tell you.
And well, you know, and not so much hot, but humid too.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The time when it gets hot is those Santa Anas when they come from the desert.
Oh yeah, yeah. We send you those on purpose. No, well, I mean, in those days, you know, nobody had AC or anything like that. You know.
Yeah, my dad lived in one of the old 1903 houses. I believe Rosinda lived in a Linda Vista house.
Yeah, hers was not one of the, she called them the beehives, you know, the 1903, the
right.
Bees houses, you know. What is she called? A beha pumpkin.
Oh, where the bees live.
Yeah, where the bees live. And, no, hers was a little bigger, you know. A lot of the times we worked outside, she had this big apricot tree in her yard, you know, and we'd sit out there, and she had a couple of chairs out there, and we'd work out there. But she worked really hard, you know.
So you only worked with her for two summers?
Two summers and a bit, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
Because then
I look at the book and I'm just thinking you've been down there 20 years working with her.
Well,
but
there's my own material, and then I think I might have told you this, but I might as well tell you again because you're recording. 1919, A.L. Kroeber up at Berkeley had a graduate student, Paul Louis Fay. And Paul Louis Fay went to Paula in 1919 and 1920 and 1921. And each time he was only there for a few days, you know. But he was a really hard worker. And, of course, there were a lot of speakers there, you know. And he went around and collected all kinds of stuff. And I published his text along with Rosinda's text, you know. And so the book, Mulawatam, is a lot of it is the Fay text. And people in those days, Rosinda's stories were really for children. Most of them were for children, except for things like, you know, the leaving Koopa and stuff like that. That was for, you know, a version for adults, I think. But for things like the creation stories and stuff, the parts that she told were the parts that you can kind of take out and have a little fun with and stuff like that, you know, and things like all the birds at the funeral where they suddenly see the coyote, you know, which is a great moment. And, of course, everybody in Southern California has the story. The Rosinda's story is a little different. All the other people, for when the coyote steals the creator's heart, he goes through the legs of Badger, because Badger is bow-legged, okay? And it's a hilarious moment, and everybody can always make something out of that, you know? It's really funny. But in Rosinda's story, it was the little blue oaks, you know, the powish, that they were little, you know, and they couldn't reach high enough to block Coyote, and he jumps over him, you know, and gets in and gets the heart. So there's stuff like that, you know, that she really enjoyed, and it went along with, you know, the way that she would tell the Coyote stories for kids and all the other stories that she had that were suitable for kids. And she probably had a much bigger repertoire than I was able to collect. But when you're telling stories for children, your language is a little different than if you're, you know, telling like, you know, way back in the day when, I mean, here, for instance, the Odon, they have what they call the four-night telling in the winter where they tell the creation. Right. And it's really fancy, you know, and they get a couple of old men there. And I heard it once. I don't know if it's still done, years ago. And the language is very high language. And you can tell that from the stuff Fay collected. His creation is a very different kind of language, you know, from Rosinda's. Actually, my husband and I are currently writing a comparative grammar of Cahuilla, Cupeña, Luiseno, Serrano, Kitanamuk, and Gabrielino, better and also known as Tongva. And we're working with some of the old stuff that was collected by J.P. Harrington back in, you know, around 1915. And he had one old guy who was a speaker of Gabrielino, Luiseno, and Serrano, a man named Jesus Jauro. He also spoke Spanish and English, of course, and probably other stuff, too. I don't know what, a little Diegueño. He spoke a little Mesa Grande stuff.
Okay.
And he just, I'm going to ignore that. He just really mixed them up, you know. So he'd speak Serrano, and he'd stick in the Gabrielino indicative particle, you know, in his Serrano things. And every now and then he'd kind of forget he was speaking Serrano, so he'd use the Gabrielino prefix. And they call it, technically, they call it an interlanguage, you know. And those guys also, when they were kind of mixing up vocabulary, too, and sometimes you would see them having a discussion in Harrington's field notes. He says, you know, so-and-so says that's a Serrano word. Somebody else says, no, that's a Tongva word. I heard my mother say it, you know. And so there's this, the languages weren't as cleanly different, you know.
They were too close together, and everybody traveled to, you know. I I mean, they say, you know, our language is different than Kaweah and different than Luseno and Kumeyaay, but we only are like 10, 12 miles from each of those
nations. Well, and Kupeno and Mountain Kaweah are real similar.
Yeah.
I mean, Kupeno is a lot fancier than Mountain Kaweah, but but they are, you know, they're very much more similar in some ways than they are to, than either of them is to the desert.
Right? And, you know, Catherine Salva was married to my dad's cousin.
Uh-huh.
So, I called her Aunt Catherine and stuff, and every time we saw her and stuff, I'd always, you know, say hi to her and everything, and I never really, like, took instruction from her, though, but I knew she was doing that. Yeah. She was doing that a lot.
Oh, well, of course, she did 2 volumes of text with Eric Elliott.
Yeah.
Gigantic
and
job.
That's where he reverts to her a lot, because he compares our language a lot to Kaweah.
Yeah.
He knows Kaweah very well.
Yeah.
He's worked with her a lot. And I know he was at her services when she passed, and I was there as well. And but yeah, he just had a deep affection for her because of what she did. I mean, she went to like Germany and
In fact, I have sitting on my computer some field notes from Hans Jakob Seiler. There was a Kaweah guy, Ray Waute. I don't know if you ever met him. He was a graduate student here for a while, and he wanted to go work with Seiler's field notes, so we got in touch with the people at Cologne. Seiler is 98 years old or something like that, but he's still alive. And he did write Ray a very kind note saying, you know, he wished him well, but he no longer worked with students, etc. I, you know, at 98, expect, you know? And he said, all my files are at Cologne, you know, and you're very welcome to go there. And so from Cologne, they sent us some of Seiler's field notes, and right at the top of one of the notes, it's, I forget what the exact date is, but it's something like, you know, February 3rd, 1972, Cologne, Catherine, with Kathy, you know, and I said she was in Cologne.
Yeah, she traveled all over, and a lot of it was teaching the language.
She was,
if not teaching language, she was working on how to teach a language, how to analyze the language. She is a
She did also. There's a very, very good Mountain Kaweah pedagogical textbook that's impossible to get your hands on. I paid $100 for mine, and Ray went online, you know, to see if he could find one. The cheapest he could find one was $300, you know. If I'd been a good person, I would have given him mine, but I wanted it. So, and in fact, I use it a lot. So.
I have a copy of her, a dried...
Dried Coyote's Tail.
Coyote Tail.
I only have one of those volumes, but my Lord, that's enough. I mean, it's 600 pages long or something like that.
It's incredible.
I tried to get both of them, but Malachy only sent me one. So,
yeah,
but it's really neat. There's some great stuff in there.
I haven't really gotten into it too much because I'm concentrating a lot on learning Kaweah and...
learning Kupeno.
Or Kupeno, I'm sorry, yeah.
Well, there are some things that are really different, though. So, one of the things that Kupeno has is, for everything that's not in the past tense, you guys have this very, very snazzy so-called auxiliary complex where you have all that stuff at the beginning of the sentence, you know, all that manapa stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaweah doesn't have that at all, you know, just doesn't have it. I mean, Kaweah has every single verb has the subject and or object prefix on it. And Kupeno only has subject prefixes in the past tense. So while the vocabularies, you know, you can run into a lot of similar things, and things like the way you possess nouns and stuff like that are pretty similar. But when you get to the verbs and the structure of the clauses, they're really quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll, you know, I mean, it doesn't bother a linguist, but I think it would bother language learner.
Yeah, there's one part where it's a verb, and I can't remember the verb now, but when it becomes plural, there's like an E-L placed in the middle of the verb. I think like kayapa.
Oh, yeah, kayapa would mean
don't
those won't, you know, I mean, it's future. Yeah, so that the ul is the third person plural for the absolutive case. One of the things that you're going to get that's on the flash drive, and I forget what its title, I think its title is Cupeno Phrase Book. I thought, well, you know, I'll make a phrase book. I mean, to just how to say hello and stuff like that. And it's pretty long. And I took it, 10 years ago when I was invited over to the visit to Warner's. I took it over there and I tried to ask people, you know, I tried to show it around, but everybody was having too much fun, you know, to look at my boring stuff. But it's in there, you know, and you can do whatever you want with it, but it doesn't have a whole lot of, you know, fancy terminology in it. It just says, how do you say this? And I'm pretty sure that it was in, I had a big folder called Cupeno, and I'm pretty sure the Cupeno phrase book was in the folder called Cupeno. I just did it at the last minute, just before you came. I thought, I cannot let Eric out of here without that flash drive. I felt so guilty.
So you worked with Lucille Laskus for 2 years. Was it 61, 62, 63?
You know, I think it was probably 62 and 63.
When did you start writing the book or putting the book together?
That thing, Mulet with Tom was, I started writing it probably in 1970, about then. I had published, or not published, but my dissertation was a grammar of the language, which I disown completely. You know, I mean, and when I wrote the grammar that you have, I never even looked at it again because I thought it was such a piece of crap. They made us write within a particular grammatical framework, you know, that just didn't work worth anything. You know, it was, I don't want to use terrible bad words for your tape, but really, it was not very useful. And so I really did not like my dissertation. As I said, I didn't go look at it. And I got a job then at 1968. In 1968, I started working at Wayne State University in Detroit. My husband was at the University of Michigan. And so I would have started working on that probably 1969, 1970, you know, putting all that stuff together. And my children were born in 1962, 1964, and 1967, you know, so that'll give you a sense of what I was up against, you know, trying to pull that together.
So you were interviewing her when you had a newborn?
The second year. I, in fact, if you listen to the tapes, I think there's a couple of them where you can hear Eric crying. You know? He's out in the back right now, you know, and you may get to meet him. But...
So, were you there when the Cultural Center was opened? That was, what, 1974?
No. We moved to Michigan in 1966.
Oh.
I next saw... Well, I remember the last time that I saw Rosinda, because that was after I came here to the University of Arizona. Probably would have been 84, and my son and I went over to have Thanksgiving with my brother in San Diego, and we drove up and spent Sunday afternoon with Rosinda after Thanksgiving, and then drove back here. So I'm pretty sure that was 84, and that's so I hadn't seen her for 20 years, you know, because I've been living back there, and she died in 87, I think, yeah. But we had, you know, we had a very, very, very nice meeting, a very nice guy. And she was, of course, very amused to see Eric, you know, which she had last seen, a little carrier, you know, and here is this big guy. Not as big as you, but, you know, big enough.
Bigger than the carrier.
Yeah, a lot bigger than the carrier. So, and she said, I don't teach anymore, you know, but...
That was Dr. Jane Hill, and that's all I have time for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Apollo Life Past and Present. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas, please give us a call at 760-742-4200, or you can email us at eortega@paulatribe.com. That's eortega@paulatribe.com. This is Eric Ortega. E-chom.